And there are three areas of preparation that I think are really important. One is to prepare yourself as counsel. A second, to prepare your client in terms of what to expect for the mediation. And thirdly, to prepare the mediator in terms of creating the best opportunity for the mediator to understand the nature of the dispute, what conversations, negotiations, discussions have been had before mediation that we can hopefully build on, and let the mediator know these things.
Welcome to Mediation Matters, the podcast that explores the art and practice of resolving conflict.
Hello, my name is Ed Page. I'm a lawyer here at Carlton Fields. I've been practicing since 1981, and I've been mediating cases since 2016. I'm joined today with Charles Castagna, a lawyer who's been practicing since 1980. He's been certified as a mediator in Florida for many years. He's been in private practice. He's been a clerk on the Florida Supreme Court. He's quite the mediator. I think he's up to over 3,500 now. Charles, say hello.
Thank you, Ed. Great to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation with you about a process that is near and dear to both of our hearts. Thank you again.
Charles, I want to get started with Mediation Matters by asking some background and general questions. And that would be, what are the three most important matters or items that you think people need to think about in mediation?
Gosh, I think that in terms of the mediator's role, it's important that people understand what it is that mediators are supposed to do. And as I view it, one of the most important things that I believe I do is to set the tone for what's going to happen, for the discussion and conversations that we're going to have in mediation, by focusing on the opportunity that the parties have to bring some control and certainty to a situation that otherwise, ultimately in a courtroom in front of a judge or a jury, they're going to have little or no control over. And so I really highlight that today the parties are in control. You get to decide the outcome. And that the worst thing that's going to happen today in mediation is that you don't settle it today. But we're here to try to do that. And I'm here to try to help you do that. So, I try to set a positive tone and maybe even end it with reminding everyone, the lawyers certainly know this, that most cases get resolved before trial. The second thing I try to do is put parties at ease in this sense, meaning that nothing happens in mediation. You don't see me wearing a robe or a gavel, as I mentioned before, and I'm not there as a decision maker, but nothing happens in mediation in terms of a resolution unless everyone agrees. So again, this is your opportunity to talk, to listen, and to hopefully come up with some common ground that makes sense to both parties. And to that end, I remind them that while the court may have ordered you to be here, the court did not order you to settle the case. I hope you will. I'll do what I can to help you with that by asking questions, by discussing strengths and weaknesses that each party has. All cases have strengths and weaknesses. Talking about strong points, weak points. But again, you get to decide what you're going to do with that information. And then finally, I usually thank the parties or counsel for selecting me to serve as the mediator. Although if it's in a federal case and I've been appointed by a judge, which is how federal mediators are typically appointed, I thank them for not filing a motion to reconsider with the court asking them to select another mediator. So when appropriate, humor can be very helpful and disarming, but you have to be certain that it is an appropriate thing to employ. So those are some initial thoughts.
Okay, great. Thanks for giving us those four points. I've been a mediator since 2016, and I've been mediating state and federal cases in my practice. From my perspective, I have been focusing on and using an article I saw in the New York Times that said that people in situations like mediation, where they're under stress, want three things. They want to be heard. Some people want to be hugged. And some people want to be helped. And as you and I know, the mediator really is not a good hugger, but they are sometimes a good helper. But primarily, the mediator is a good and excellent listener. And I have found that if the mediator focuses on listening to both parties in the mediation or other parties who are interested or involved in the lawsuit, as well as the lawyers, and truly seek to listen with intent to understand, not merely to reply, that the mediation goes a lot better than if other techniques are employed. So I think listening is important. I think, as you may have said to me in the past, Charles, it's also important to read the room, to look at what are some of the dynamics going on in the room between the parties on one side and the parties on the other, including the lawyers and the actual parties to the lawsuit, maybe someone from the insurance company or the like, or maybe somebody else who's present. And then finally, I'm borrowing a phrase that I learned a long time ago. I think it's important to remind the parties that you can either tell your story at a trial, whether it's a bench trial or a jury trial, or you can, through mediation, seek to write the end of the story by resolving the factual and legal differences that you may have with the opposition and trying to write the end of the story through a settlement agreement. And it's important to share and give credit for that, because I think when I was mediating a case with you, Charles, maybe more than 20 years ago, you used that phrase and it sank in, and I've probably used it over 500 times since then. But with that, Charles, why don't you tell us a little bit before we get really into the meat of this podcast? Give us an idea of your background or and experience.
Well, for about 15 years, I had a general civil commercial practice. Initially started as a law clerk to James Adkins up in Tallahassee for a couple of years, and then went to Washington, D.C. with an insurance defense firm and moved back to the Tampa Bay area, which is where I'm from. First to St. Pete with a law firm there, and then in Clearwater. But again, just a general civil commercial practice for the most part. And then about the 30 years since that time, it's been exclusively mediation, a full-time for the most part. And I stopped counting at about 3,500. So I've done some number in excess of that, but that's all I've been doing for the last 30 plus years.
Thank you for that. And from my vantage point, my background is as follows. I was a career prosecutor for 18 years. I worked at the state attorney's office in Florida, in Tampa, in Hillsborough County for a number of years, and then worked for the Department of Justice at the United States Attorney's Office in Tampa, handling criminal matters and appeal matters and a variety of other matters for several years. And then I moved up to Washington, D.C. and served on the staff of two independent counsel offices, one David M. Barrett, who was charged with investigating one of the cabinet members or potential cabinet members in the Clinton administration. And then I worked for Judge Starr for a couple of years in the Whitewater investigation. After that, in January of 2000, I joined Carlton Fields, and I've been here ever since. I just had my 25-year anniversary. And as I pointed out earlier, I've been a mediator, a Florida Supreme Court certified mediator since 2016, and mediate civil cases of all different types and colors and the like, as well as aviation matters and False Claims Act cases. So with that, let's change to some of the other topics we want to cover during this podcast, and that is the role of the mediator here in the actual mediation process. So with that, Charles, help us understand, what is your view, since you've been doing this for quite a long time and have mediated over 3,000 cases, of the role of the mediator in a case?
Well, Ed, as you well know from your extensive experience as a lawyer and as a mediator, I would say there are probably as many different styles of mediation as there are mediators. And my style is to do what I can at the outset to set the tone for a productive and hopefully successful mediation, which, by the way, doesn't necessarily mean settling the case, but hopefully at least means having some productive and positive discussions toward that end. But setting the tone in a calm, collegial way, letting the parties know that I'm here to help you find common ground if you choose to do so. And I really make that point because, as we maybe have alluded to some degree here this afternoon, self-determination is a huge part of what mediation is all about. It's the opportunity for the parties to decide, I think as you phrased it earlier, right, the ending, right, the outcome, how things are going to work out. So I like to highlight the if you choose to do so part in terms of self-determination, because even though the judge may have ordered the parties to mediate, the judge doesn't order parties to get the case settled. So that's the opportunity, and I really try to focus on that. And I think I touched on this before as well, that the parties get to control all of the variables, the time, the risk, the uncertainty, and the expense. So I remind them of that all of these things are in their control today. And it's just a great opportunity to talk, to listen, and to try to come up with something that makes sense all around. And speaking of listening, which I think was very important to you as well in your initial thoughts and comments, My attitude is, since we have two ears and one mouth, I make every effort to listen a lot more than I speak. And when I do speak, it's after having listened, hopefully, intently to what is being said.
Well, I was going to ask you, has it been your experience that if you listen more, you actually learn more, right? And can offer them some maybe wisdom or advice about how to resolve the case, given
Absolutely.
What you've heard?
Absolutely. I would say that is a fact.
So what I heard you say was, you, in your role as a mediator, your style, I think, as you put it, is to serve as a catalyst for what I heard you say is a conversation between the parties, number one. Number two, to listen. And then finally, what does the party and the party's lawyer want out of the case? And is it realistic? Is that your role?
I believe absolutely it is to ask them, and again, then listen after you ask the question, but what is important to you? What would you like to say? What do you want the other side to know? This is when you're meeting privately with the parties after the initial opening session. But if there's anything else that they want me to share from one party to the other, But absolutely, what is important to you? What do you want to have done here today?
So that's your role. And what about this? Do you ever cover in your introductory comments that you, the parties, may impasse during the mediation, but that's not a particularly bad thing because the parties have still benefited by spending time together, by learning about the other side's case, and by letting, as I like to call it, the facts that you've learned that you may not have been aware of, marinate for a while so that you can figure out, maybe in a second mediation, or maybe by what I call a private mediation, that would be settlement discussions between the parties and their lawyers after the impasse, that the case can resolve. Have you ever seen those kind of situations arise, Charles?
Absolutely, Ed. I think sometimes you realize at some point in the mediation that today is not the day for to get the case settled for whatever the reason. Maybe more discovery needs to be done. Maybe a certain witness needs to be deposed or redeposed, or you know, additional information needs to be gathered. There are a lot of reasons where you sometimes get to a point. And maybe it's an impasse, or maybe the parties would agree, again, depending on the circumstances, that we don't want to impasse it. Let's continue the mediation, and we'll come back and talk in 2 weeks or 2 months or whatever is appropriate to what is going on and what needs to be done. And then they circle back. And in the meantime, as you say, another option is whether an impasse is declared or not. And I've actually seen this happen both ways, sometimes with an impasse and sometimes with a continuation, where counsel is going to be talking between now and that next event, whether it's a trial or a rescheduling of the mediation or whatever it might be, and may very well end up resolving the dispute in the interim. So all of those things can happen. Certainly, they're all positive steps and things that hopefully resulted from the conversation that you as the mediator have been able to facilitate and get people thinking about additional steps. And I think it's important to let them know during the mediation that it looks like today might not be the day, but here are some good things we've talked about. This is my understanding of maybe one or two things that you all have agreed on. These are some things that need to be done. And let's figure out what makes the most sense, whether you want to come back or just continue the discussions on your own. But it's all good. It's all good. Just because it doesn't settle does not mean that the mediation by any means has been a failure.
Yeah, so I think the takeaway is that you don't define an unsuccessful mediation because they impassed. It's just a result for the day. The parties could have impassed, or they could continue the mediation for another day and still resolve the case, which is all good, correct?
Exactly.
Okay, well, look, we understand the role of the mediator from your perspective as a catalyst to continue or engender and make sure there's decent and good conversation about the facts and the law and the risk involved for the parties, and also to be a good listener. And then finally, to really determine, to listen and find out what the party and the lawyer wants out of the case. But let's talk now about what are some of the important rules for the mediator to be familiar with and to suggest for both the mediator and the clients involved, and then the lawyers. I think you have something to share here, so I'd like to hear that.
I do, and there are rules, and there are rules, and we're not going to get into, I don't think, today, the standards of professional conduct for mediators and those technical rules, although there are a lot of really good ones and important ones that maybe will be a good topic for perhaps another discussion. But in terms of my rules, what I find to be helpful and really like to stress with the parties, well, not parties, I don't talk to the parties before the mediation if they're represented, but really more for counsel to know, and that's these three: prepare, and there are three areas of preparation that I think are really important. One is to prepare yourself as counsel. A second, to prepare your client in terms of what to expect for the mediation. And thirdly, to prepare the mediator in terms of creating the best opportunity for the mediator to understand the nature of the dispute, what conversations, negotiations, discussions have been had before mediation that we can hopefully build on, and let the mediator know these things. So I'm going to leave it at that for prepare, and then we can elaborate on each or any or all of those as you would like to. But I just wanted to touch on that as sort of a general framework and drill down on whichever ones you would like to, and would like to hear your thoughts as well in terms of rules.
Well, I like to start with drilling down, Charles, on the preparing that the mediator does, because I think it's important for the parties and lawyers to understand that good preparation that the mediator does and engages in really comes in large part from the lawyer. And that is, the lawyer has the opportunity to submit a mediation summary. And it's been my experience that the better the mediation summary it is, that mediation is going to be a better outcome or will have a better result. And so I look to mediation summaries. It's not enough for me, you see, to just look at the complaint, although I can, but I don't know the takeaways. I don't know how to read between the lines unless it's provided to me in a good and encompassing mediation summary. I also think it's important to for the mediation summary to set forth what the party's bad facts are and what the party's good facts are. And concerning the good facts, we need to know what the description of them is and where they come from, how important they are to the success of the counts and the complaint and the theory of the case and the like. But we also need to know what the bad facts are, if any. These are not shared with the other side, either by the mediator or through the mediation summary. So the party has protection there. The lawyer has protection there because these are confidential mediation summaries. And so it's important because really the mediation exercise is in part about risk assessment, about how this case might play out if it was tried to a jury or to a judge in what's called a bench trial. So it's very important, I think, to be as candid as possible with the facts involved in your case, whether they're good facts or bad facts. And also, you know, a lot of people are really afraid of their bad facts in a case, so it's important to say how you would distinguish that bad fact or explain it, or as a lawyer, perhaps even rely upon it in the theory of your case as a way to advance your side of the cause of action or the claim. What are your thoughts about that, Charles?
I think the preparation of the mediator is vital, and it often gets overlooked. I agree also with your thought that a well-written and well-thought-out summary is going to be more helpful than a complaint. Although a complaint, at least of the pleadings, it will be helpful to give you an idea of the nature of the case, but to really kind of read between the lines and get a feel for what's going on, a summary can be helpful in that regard. And what I find even more helpful is to pick up the phone, call counsel, let them know that it's confidential pre-mediation caucus, that I'm not going to disclose anything you share with me. And what do you think would be helpful for me to know before we have the mediation next week? And at some point, perhaps ask, as you just discussed, Ed, can you share with me the strengths that you see on the other side of the table and the weaknesses that you have? And I'll tell counsel this very forthrightly, because it'll help me help you when we're at mediation in a caucus with your client in a private meeting to have these discussions in a more intelligent and informed way than I otherwise might be able to do. To perhaps help your client with some reality testing and what things really look like from the court's point of view. Again, not that it would be appropriate. This is one of the rules that is very clear. Mediators are not to indicate their personal or professional opinion about what the court in which the case has been filed is going to do. But I certainly can, if I've got a little bit more background, ask counsel, what do you think the judge is going to do with this particular motion or this set of facts and circumstances? And that's absolutely in bounds and appropriate and frankly helpful to talk about in front of the client. So the preparation of the mediator can go a long way toward making the process, again, as productive as it can possibly be when it's go time and the mediation has been scheduled.
Okay, so let's talk about two other components or rules that you and I like to stress in preparing for a mediation and conducting one, and that would be preparing the client and then finally preparing yourself, the lawyer, where they would know the case, know the law involved, and be able to articulate about the issues involved in the case. Before we end today's podcast and continue on another day in this podcast series called Mediation Matters. But Charles, using that hook, what do you say about the lawyer's role in preparing a client for mediation? What should that lawyer be stressing with the client who's never mediated before, who may have mediated before, but who needs another warm-up?
And thank you for those qualifiers, Ed, because there are clients and there are clients in terms of sophistication and familiarity with the mediation process. So talking about preparing clients that hopefully, I sometimes say this in my opening, I hope this is the first and last time you go through the mediation process. again, if appropriate, and if humor is appropriate in this setting, I might even say that the nature of the lawyer-client relationship is such that I hope that I don't ever have to see the client again, but counsel I like to see on a repeated basis. But in any event, I think in terms of letting the client know that it's informal, that you're not, as counsel, going to be coming in and breathing fire and criticizing the other side and their case, these kinds of things. I mean, you can, and I've seen that done, and it's been extremely counterproductive. And it basically adds a considerable length of time, if it hasn't totally undermined the mediation, to trying to get back to where you would have been if you had started things out on a more conciliatory basis. And so let the client know why you're going to be talking in a calmer and more focused fashion in terms of trying to be collegial here, trying to be, you know, cooperative in terms of negotiating with the other party and those sorts of things. It's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of a good negotiator and someone that knows how to get things done. So let me turn it back to you for any additional thoughts you might have on that point.
I think that's very important just to frame for the client, because a lot of clients' ideas about what should happen in the law occur from television. And most of the time, we don't watch mediations on television. We watch courtroom drama where people are cross-examining and they are on the attack and they're trying to test and undermine the credibility of a witness. And those are all things that are fun to watch on television, but they're not really the seeds for success in a mediation, as you so well put. And in other words, you'd have to come in with a different attitude, a different style of diplomacy and statesman-like behavior in order to achieve, you know, the goal for your client as a representative. And the mediator's doing really the same thing. I think you've already pointed this out, that you're trying to be soft-spoken but emphatic. You're trying to be heard. You're trying to educate people about the process, to listen as best you can, to point out risks and the like. But none of this is done with a tone that's full of anger or a retribution or revenge or the like. It's just simply matter of fact. And so I think this is a good starting point to educate the client to say, look, you're going to see me in a different role and engage in different behavior if this was a trial or a hearing on a motion to dismiss or we were in front of a different audience. But for mediation, this is the correct behavior because we're trying to resolve the matter, not inflame passions and the like. What about another one? Any other ideas or notions, Charles, for preparing the client besides what we just discussed, which was the lawyer might behave differently than the client expects?
Yeah, and I think to that end, and you mentioned this. In fact, I once had a lawyer call me in advance, say, Charles, these are our weak points. These are some cases. Please discuss these with me in our caucus with my client present, so that we can once again sort of go through this. So again, to the extent, now the lawyer did not tell the client that was not part of the client's preparation. That was actually, I think, you know, preparing the mediator to have that. But the idea that you can, I think, let the client know, this is an important one, that you are going to be sharing some things and maybe coming across in a more conciliatory way than they might like or they might have expected otherwise. And it's been so effective. I had a case last week where a defense counsel addressed a plaintiff in the general session and was just very complimentary of her and her deposition and just conceded that, you know, you're going to make an outstanding witness and we're not here to say that you weren't injured. We just have some differences. And it was just such a nice touch to set the tone to where a conversation could be had rather than the way sometimes it's approached in a more negative way.
All right. Well, hey, let's end today's podcast with mediation matters on the final point or final rule. And there are many rules, as you mentioned at the outset. Some are in the statutes and some are ethical rules. And we'll talk more about these in another installment of this Mediation Matters podcast. But let's end with this, and that is, what can the lawyer do? We've kind of touched on it a little bit.
And I think you said prepare, prepare, prepare. And for the lawyer handling the case for the client in mediation, to know the case, know the law, know the facts, and et cetera. But how would you articulate this and describe it, Charles?
You know the facts, but know your good facts, know their good facts. Know your bad facts, know their bad facts. Same goes with the law. And be prepared to discuss both of those with the mediator. I think that sometimes lawyers have to kind of get that in their head that it's not a sign of weakness. It's not going to compromise my case. It's going to better enable the mediator to have the kinds of discussions that he or she needs to have with me and my client about what we need to talk about and to consider and to evaluate in terms of negotiating either to pay more or accept less, depending on which side of the table you're sitting on and what the nature of the dispute is, but to help the mediator accomplish those things and get each party to take the necessary steps. And you know, it's something really is almost, you would think it would go without saying, but I've seen cases where, God, I don't remember my last offer or my last demand. Let me take some time to try to figure that out. And it just sets a bad tone, sends the wrong message to everyone involved. And so take the time in advance, you know where you left off. If there were previous discussions, know where you want to go, what's the end game. And then that way you can have a strategy around hopefully getting there or getting as close to that as you possibly can.
Right. Well, next time, as we continue mediation matters, we'll start off with a summary of what we talked about today, and then we will advance and go further and deeper into this idea about mediation matters and successful practice tips and the like. So I hope you'll join us the next time. Thank you.
This podcast is intended for general information and educational purposes only and should not be relied on as if it were advice about a particular fact situation. The distribution of this podcast is not intended to create, and receipt of it does not constitute, an attorney-client relationship with Carlton Fields,